Welcome back from spring break, Toby.
Welcome back from marriage break.
Yeah.
No, wait, that doesn't sound good.
No. Just marriage? Well, we, H-Train and I, Toby is referring to the fact that I got married over spring break.
Don't sound too excited about it.
We came up with a kind of like a action movie like name for our wedding, which is anniversary year zero.
That's so good.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so that, yeah, that's, I'm back from anniversary year zero.
It's kind of like patient zero.
Yeah, or like, I don't know, it sounded kind of die-hardy to me, which I liked it.
Yeah.
And I feel like I was as exhausted at the end of the whole process of making the wedding happen as Bruce Willis probably was at the end of all of the Die Hard movies combined.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Anyway.
You know, he walked on glass barefoot for a while in one of those.
Oh, I'm sure he did. So the reason that we're here talking is because you actually recorded a podcast interview in my absence. You wanna tell us a little bit about
that? This is part of a larger idea that I wanted to make a kind of brief series out of.
Yeah.
Which is this thing that we are. Marion L. Britton, postdoctoral fellows.
Right.
And I was thinking, it's a fascinating postdoc.
Yeah.
Obviously, partially because we're in it.
Right.
But also because it's relatively rare academically, and certainly in the humanities, to have so many postdocs concentrated in one place with a pretty stable 3-year contract.
Sure.
Able to bring a lot of new research and teaching kind of methods into a single space and then kind of move on into the larger field. So it's a fascinating place to sort of concentrate advances, to kind of practice certain forms of exploratory pedagogy, and then to kind of export those gains out to the larger university community. But in many ways, it's unclear what exactly that is.
Right.
Like, a lot of this stuff sounds like kind of buzzwords.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, hey, let's do a sort of past, present, future series on the Britton Postdoctoral Fellowship, and just kind of suss out what this thing is.
Yeah, it's a brilliant idea.
So this thing that's coming up is part one of that series, and it's thinking about the future of the fellowship in talking to Dr. Halcyon Lawrence, who works in TechCom, which is the fellowship as it deals with workplace experience and technical communication, as you might see in the, as we investigate, scare quotes, real world.
Right, and it's worth noting that this is kind of a huge thing, a big part of what Britton Fellows here at Georgia Tech are doing. You know, there's, at least 3 or 4 new fellows each year who are hired to teach TechCom, either having to do with business communications or computer science or what. And I'm sure you guys talk about that.
Yeah, this is exactly what we talk about, because it's something that I was only extremely vaguely aware of before the interview.
Right, me too, so I'm looking forward to hearing it. And it's worth asking, before we get started with the interview, what else do we have to look forward to in this interview series?
Funny you should ask. We're going to talk about the present state of the program with one of the people who runs it extremely competently, Dr. Andy Frazee. And we're going to talk about the past, although not incredibly distant past.
The very recent past.
Yeah, the very recent past. With Dr. Lisa Yazyk.
Awesome.
Who was a Marion L. Britton postdoctoral fellow a few generations of postdocs past.
And it's worth noting, she's still here as a faculty member in LMC teaching about science fiction.
And and of course, Andy Frazee was also a past Britton
fellow. Right, who is now the associate director of the Writing Communication Program.
Yep.
Great. Well, hey, Toby, I'm really glad you did this, and I can't wait to hear you and Hal, what you guys have to say.
I can't wait for you to hear it.
I'm Andrew Marzoni.
I'm Toby Wilson-Bates.
And this is
The Office Hour. All right.
Okay.
Hal, welcome.
Thank you.
It's so wonderful to have you
it's
here.
It's good to be here.
So I wanted to say briefly before we started that, of course, for the obvious reasons that you're brilliant, I wanted to invite you to this.
But also just the reason that since I've started doing podcasts, I've realized how beautiful some people's voices are.
Okay, well, that would be me?
You have a beautiful
voice.
I've realized how I have a sort of boring, stereotypical white guy voice that's not as exciting to listen to.
I think it's the accent, but that could just be me.
Yeah, this is a good, well, maybe we'll discuss that.
Okay, a little bit later.
So, as good, our listeners should know that you are a Marion L. Britton postdoctoral fellow, that you're a brilliant doctor from the Illinois Institute of Technology.
Yes, that's right.
But I thought maybe I would just force you to introduce yourself.
Sure. So my name is Halcyon Lawrence, and I am proudly from Trinidad and Tobago. I know the Tubi has some connection to my island. We won't say what that is. And my area of, so as Tubi mentioned, I have a PhD in technical communication from the Illinois Institute of Technology in Chicago, and my area of study very broadly is I'm interested in accent bias and the ways in which technology forces us to assimilate to standard accents so that we could interact with speech technologies.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Very, very well said.
Thank you.
And so part of this thing, as you know, is this whole podcast thinking about this Britton postdoctoral fellow. And I think one of the things that I really wanted to suss out in talking to you is the fact that I did an English PhD looking at, you know, Victorian literature. You came from a major tech school looking at, like, kind of technological issues of communication. In some ways, we're very different animals.
Yes.
In the world of academia. And yet, like, we both kind of bear the same postdoctoral title. So maybe part of what I was interested in you talking about is your wing of this Marion L. Britton thing. Like, what is the side of this that leans towards technology in the sort of more immediate and maybe sort of skills-based aspect?
Yeah. So people who teach in tech comm in the fellowship teach one of two courses. There's the strict tech comm course that we offer, and that's offered to any major across the university and undergraduate major. What's interesting about that course is that I think and then it's also offered to business majors.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's interesting about that is the tech comm at that level, it's an upper level course. It sort of takes on different flavors depending on the orientation of the instructor, like, you know, all courses. But there isn't what I would call a standard tech comm syllabus.
Right.
I think,
is there a standard set of practices that you teach? Because I think about this, like, in English, of course, someone teaching a class on postmodernism is wildly different from someone teaching a class on 16th century British literature. But some of the practices in terms of close reading or forms of symbolic study sort of are common to both. Is that also true in that world?
Yeah, so I think what's interesting about tech comm, certainly an introductory class to tech comm, is that it's about workplace writing, and more specifically, it's about the ability to be able to write for a range of audiences. So rhetoric plays a huge part in any tech comm syllabus. It's about how do you begin to rethink about audiences for sometimes the same message. How is that reframed? How is that rewritten? How is that represented? So there are, I think, certain kinds of approaches that you'd find that are common across all tech comm.
Interesting. But those commonalities are like structural rhetoric. It's not like coding or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the approaches you tend to find is a genre-based approach, so that there's certain kinds of documents that you find popping up in most, if not all, tech comm courses. So that students are asked to write a formal report or a feasibility report or a usability report. So that at the core of it, it's still a report. It's a long technical document, but the subject matter changes. And it is the subject matter, I think, that really defines it as being technical in nature, technical communication. So for example, the courses that I teach focus on usability. In the first semester that I was here, the Office of International Education took us on as a client, my class as a client. They had just recently completed doing an upgrade to their website that sort of focuses on providing information for international students, but also promoting their study abroad programs. And they were really interested in figuring out how this website was working in the real world. And so the entire semester, us, the students in that class, went about doing research on the website, doing heuristic evaluation. So they sort of had these standards for what a good website should look like and how it should interact with users. And they did evaluations. They tested users. They developed materials to promote, you know, certain programs on the website and so on. But the kinds of documents that they produced in the process were standard documents. They were reports. They were letters. So those genres get repeated over and over again. But the subject matter or the lens with which you start to expose students to for TechCom can vary. So I know of fellows who have done accessibility and disability studies for their TechCom courses. Some have just focused on, you know, sort of strict BizCom, business communication type, you know, issues. So
I want to grab at one phrase you said, which is the real world, which is this thing I've heard of.
Yeah, we can get to escape in academia, don't we?
Well, but this is the thing. I feel like as an academic, half of what I do is fight people who are saying academics aren't the real world.
Yeah.
And then the other half of what I do is to fight people who say academics are the real world.
Yeah.
And then this seems as this uncomfortable. Of course, if I teach my students to think critically about the complex thinking that's going on in Shakespeare or something, I expect that kind of critical engagement, that kinds of subtle symbolic analysis, that kinds of skill set will translate anywhere. And that in that way, they're more prepared for, you know, the real world than they would be learning how to write a technical document that will be out of date in 5 years. However, they're also not going to do an analysis of Shakespeare again at any part in their point in their lives. So do you feel like TechCom, especially, I think it's interesting, I didn't realize this association with business, it's like a reorientation of rhetorical communication towards the real world, whatever that is?
I think maybe the better term should have been a workplace experience rather than the real world, if I can retract that. Yeah, so it is workplace writing. It is workplace writing that is dealing with technical issues, which is different from BizCom or health communication, so that there is this body or discipline and the communication issues that arise out of these disciplines have to be handled in particular ways. And so technical communicators see themselves as sort of standing in the gap between those who are incredibly technical and those perhaps who aren't, and sort of do this translation process that bring this sort of rhetorical sensitivity to a context. And they say, well, what does this non-expert need to know that the expert can't readily explain? And those kinds of things happen in industry, in the real world, I'm using air quotes here, all the time, that there's this, you know, the constant need to have this. I have a friend in Chicago who calls it geek to non-geek translation, that we sort of, you know, are constantly negotiating those technical and non-technical issues.
That is fascinating. Yeah. That's fascinating to think about. I teach a class on robotics and literature and this kind of stuff. And today I had my students very slowly as a group reading the first couple of paragraphs of Donna Haraway's Cyborg Manifesto, which is, at least to my mind, an almost legendarily opaque document. And then kind of working through, like, why is she using this word? What does she mean by feminism here? What does she mean when she says, like, a cyborg or chimera or blasphemy or something like this? And you realize that this is English, but you have to translate it so thoroughly. And I wonder if that's something that's increasingly happening in technical fields.
Well, I mean, one of the things I would say to you in response to just the anecdote that you just shared is that one of the requirements of 3403, which is a TechCom course here at Georgia Tech, is that you successfully complete 1101 and 1102. I mean, there are certain skills that we are expecting our students in these upper level technical communication courses to come in with. And so that kind of work in terms of interpretation and slaving over the meanings of words, those are the very kinds of things that we're expecting that our students are going to come in with, a critical thinking about language and communication issues. So yes, you are providing, you know, some key groundwork to the kind of work that we pick up and do. What I think is interesting is that students themselves, particularly here at Tech, don't have an idea of what technical communication is or what they should be leaving with as the skills package at the end of the day. because quite often in our reviews, we hear students say, I thought this was a tech comm course. And so you begin to realize that in their minds, they think that at the end of a tech comm course, I should be able to write a resume, or I should be able to write, you know, this standard report, not realizing that you have done those very same things, but because it's presented through the lens of a technical issue, that what happens is the genre sort of float to the background, that you aren't putting at the foreground, you're going to do these six genres this semester. What you're saying is this is an issue that we're going to deal with in this organization, and you're going to communicate about it in different ways. And so I think it puts a responsibility on us as technical communicators and instructors in the field to make sure that students at the end of that process are able to say, okay, what are the skills that I now have having come through a course like this? And how can I translate that into this workplace experience that I'm going to have later on in life? And I think it's the same kind of thing that you are grappling with. I mean, at the end of the day, they're not going to be doing Shakespeare ever again, most likely. But what are the skills that they have developed that they're going to be able to take into their workplace experience later on?
So do you see this, and this is obviously part of why I've invited you here, I mean, other than just your brilliant voice, but...
I'm going to have to start charging for that.
Do you see this as, in some ways, the sort of future of communication? Like, is communication becoming increasingly technical, or at the very least, in terms of the training that we're giving students, does it sort of need to be more technical? Is this something that the Marian L. Britton postdoctoral fellow seems uniquely sort of positioned? Because I don't know if I will ever say like a bad word about the tenure track, especially as it's obviously the sort of golden goose that one pursues in this field. But given that there is such a consistent shift and renewal, the term of the Marian L. Britton postdoctoral fellow is 3 years, where you have these like really brilliant new minds coming in at the least every 3 years or so to sort of do edge teaching in the field. Do you think that this program is uniquely positioned to kind of catch the wave of tech comm, if that is the wave?
Yeah. So a couple of things, and I'm probably going to forget as I go along. So I'm going to need a reminder about a couple of questions that you asked. But I think, so my short answer is yes. I think that there is going to be a growing need to be able to have technical communicators be a part of the program, and in ways that are really interesting, because I'll share a bit later about just a course that I taught right alongside Lauren Neef last semester that was a English 101 course.
Was it the podcast class?
Yes. Yes. It ended in a podcast, but it was about the future of speech technology.
Oh.
So that there are interesting ways that we could link tech comm to what we see as being first year composition classes. But I want to back up and start by saying that the field thinks about tech comm in one of two ways. And while I can define them in very specific ways, I don't think that there is necessarily a clear distinction between the two. The first definition of tech comm would be the communication of technical matters. So if I am writing, for example, a manual that gives instructions about how to build or set up IKEA furniture, that would be considered to be a form of technical documentation.
Mm-hmm.
The field of tech comm also defines technical communication as the ways in which technology is used to communicate.
Oh, wow.
And if we go with that second definition, that's where a lot of my work resides, then there is going to be no end of a need to be able to attract technical communicators at a tech school like this to be able to deal with issues of communication. So that's my long answer. I think, yes, if we think about technical communication, about these changing ways of communication are being influenced by technology, I think that Georgia Tech in particular is just so well positioned, and the fellowship is so well positioned to be able to capitalize on the work that the technical communicators do and bring to the table. So I also want to say that I have been finding it really interesting to be able to look to fields like literature and to be able to find narratives to explain not necessarily what I do, but to be able to explain the impact of what I study.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I mentioned before, I'm doing work in accents and accent bias and the ways in which we, as non-standard speakers of the English language as I am, the way in which I have to assimilate and change my accent if I'm going to have any sort of real interaction with devices like Alexa or Siri. Mm-hmm. I was home in Trinidad in December, and a friend of mine who just got a new iPhone, she, you know, asked Siri to do something, and there was no response. And then she just broke into this American accent, and Siri responded, and I was slap-jawed, and I said, do you do that often? She said, I do that all the time.
Wow. It's just like a little colonial overseer.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, right there in your head.
Well, you know, the point that I make now is that growing up in Trinidad, there's a term, it's a derogatory term, but it's a term that we use. It's called freshwater Yankee.
Yeah, have you heard the term? Candace was showing me that the, there was a carnival, freshwater Yankee
They would be dressed as sailors.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely.
That's right.
And the term was used and applied to anyone who would go away for a period of time to the U.S. and come back speaking with an accent.
Mm.
So if you went abroad for 6 years and you came back with an accent, that you would be called a freshwater Yankee, but you could go for a weekend and come back with an accent.
My brother, I love my brother so much. He's a brilliant and wonderful human being. He went and did a study abroad in London when he was in college, and he came back and he would say cheers. And I was like, that's not a thing you've ever said before.
It's so easy to pick up these colloquialisms, but it's also so easy to pick up these accents. And what I find absolutely amazing about it is the power of technology has brought this phenomenon of a freshwater Yankee to our doorsteps. That in Trinidad, for example, you don't have to go away for a weekend to have to speak like an American. You know, and these adjustments that we make in our accents are about survival. I mean, for a long time, the idea of it being derogatory came from the fact that we didn't understand that people had to adjust their accents for survival. And so to make the point that I was talking about literature and narratives helping me explain the effect of this, because I think what is lost in the process is legitimacy and identity.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wonderful book by Chris Cleave called Little Bee. And in his first chapter, it's written through the eyes of a Nigerian teenager who is held in detention in a U.S., at the U.K. border, sorry. And she talks about the fact that she has learned the Queen's English so well, even better than the British.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I can identify with. And she says, but you know, sometimes that accent feels like the way that you look at nail polish that is sort of just chipped off and just, you know, it's a little bit stained. It's a little bit inauthentic in some ways. And so I have found, and only because of the fellowship, because I'm around English PhDs that I would not have been exposed to, for example, in my PhD program, that I am able to look to narratives, not to be able, for example, to explain the phenomena, but certainly to be explain the effect of the phenomena and to be able to have these creative lenses to be able to bring, you know, some of those stories home, you know. So yeah, I think that the Britain Fellowship certainly provides opportunities for more and more for technical communicators to as sites of the fellowship and Georgia Tech in particular as sites of work and investigation in a really unique way.
Well, my pseudo dystopian version of this future then, which I'd pose to you, where it's like, let's say we say, well, you're never gonna do Shakespeare again.
Yeah.
Let's get rid of all that literature crap. And instead, like, let's make it so all writing that students do is work experience writing.
Right.
And has to be technically oriented and ultimately vocational or technical in its approach and has to appear in the real world or be tested by the real world. Do we just annihilate stories and literature at that point as like part of this sort of like academic, I don't know, academic institution? Or is it, as you seem to also say, that like the stories actually become more important than ever in those spaces? Like, I feel like either one of these realities.
Yeah, I think there needs to be a period of, or maybe more deliberate or intentional connections between English, the humanities generally, and this little enclave that we call technical communication. I think that narratives such as the one that I just described are brilliant ways of, it really is a rhetorical approach that I have begun to take to be able to see if I am talking, for example, as I just recently did at a conference, I'm talking to historians of technology to be able to use a narrative, to be able to explain something that's really a technical phenomenon.
Yeah.
And so I think there's no end to that need to be able to look across the disciplines, to be able to find those connections. I also think that there's a really unique intersection in the kind of work, for example, that you do and the work that I do, to be able to say to students that here are ways in which, if you're looking at Shakespeare and you're also considering technical communication, these are the ways in which it is all about communication. But more importantly, this is how you're going to use it in the workplace. And these are the, and I think that we have to do perhaps a little bit more work in our classrooms to be able to help students make those connections. Because I find, especially at a tech school, our students are almost like hostages. you know, I mean, they're a little bit more enthusiastic in their first year because they don't know what they've gotten themselves into. But by the time I get them, they are hostages. And quite honestly, you know,
that's why they're texting in class. It's just SOS over and over again.
Oh, absolutely. They're looking to make a jailbreak. You know, part of it is about legitimacy. They're looking to see that what you are teaching in the classroom is going to make an impact or in some way help them to get a job. That's the reality of it. And so I do think as instructors, we have a little bit more work to do to make those connections, whether it be Shakespeare, whether it be usability. Students need to be able to see, you know, some of the more practical aspects of the skills that we're teaching. I have a funny feeling I am all off topic with you, but...
Have you ever listened to the podcast before?
Yeah, you and Andrew tend to jump around a little bit. Sorry, Andrew.
Yeah. One of us has been on every one of these podcasts, which are always off topic. One of us just showed up. I think it's pretty clear
Okay. Who's
at fault. So my last question then.
Yeah.
What's one thing you imagine in the future of this field, either specifically for the Marian L. Britton Postdoctoral Fellow or TechCom in general, the next 5 years?
I think more courses like what Lauren, Neef, and I were able to offer last semester. So just to back up, Lauren and I got together to design a course called Series Progeny, and it was the future of interaction design. And we wanted our students to imagine a world where the technology they were interacting with was speech technology, but it was also speech-only technology. In other words, there was no visual support, there was no textual support in this technology. And that isn't far-fetched to think. And there are demographics right now that require that kind of technology.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, people who can't see, you know, have sort of visual disabilities, you know, need hearing technologies that don't have visual support. And so we wanted our students, on the one hand, to be able to think about some of the technical issues that,
mm-hmm.
you know, what are some of the requirements that we have to consider. But we also, because it was also linked to their writing composition, we talked a lot about argument and we talked a lot about evidence. And, you know, and it was just this really great synergy between what we do in terms of teaching first-year writing and teaching research methods. And then this really practical, you know, here's the reality of the future. You know, here's a problem that we have to solve. And how do we go about communicating these new ideas? And I think there's going to be, if I were to imagine a future for the program, I would love to see more courses like that, where technical communicators are sitting down with English PhDs and seeing where are the intersections. Because one thing is clear, that in a class like that, where at the end of it, for example, students were able to produce a portfolio, at least for my mm-hmm. part of the class, they were able to point to documents that they produced as part of the process that dealt with technical issues that they're going to meet in the workplace. So I think it's sort of a win-win situation. The students come away, you know, feeling like that need has been met. I can see how I can use this for work. You know, we've had our pedagogical, you know, mm-hmm. objectives met as well. And I think the quality of PhDs are attracted to this fellowship. I think there are no end of opportunities when it comes to collaboration. I would really love to see more courses. And I'm hearing more and more about those kinds of interactions and plans. So, yeah.
Wow, that was beautiful.
Oh, really?
I cannot wait to live in your future. Thank you so much
for coming. Thank you, Toby. I feel like I should apologize at the end of this. It was more laughter than anything else.
That's good.
The Office Hour is produced by Andrew Marzoni and Tobias Wilson Bates. Britton Fellows in the Writing and Communication Program at the Georgia Institute of Technology. To find out more about the topics discussed, see our page at textile.lmc.gatech.edu. Thanks for listening!